Hawaii Telescope Legacy Survey. That's what that unpronounceable acronym string means. And I'm specifically talking about the wide component of the survey. Alex Conley talked earlier about supernovae, which were from the deep component. Just in case you don't know where University of Waterloo is, you're in Waterloo. Perimeter is where the A is, where it says PI, and University of Waterloo is that big thing up in the top left, and it's about a kilometer, nice kilometers walk across the park. Okay, so to give this a bit of motivation, I'm going to remind you of a few things that were touched upon briefly this morning by Tony. And I want to emphasize a few points in a little bit more detail. So we've heard a lot about classic cosmological tests, which really test the global geometry and expansion rates, supernovae, CMB, acoustic oscillations, and so on. There's also complementary tests, which really measure the growth of fluctuations as a function of redshift. Okay, so we know what those are at high redshift from the CMB very accurately. There's also the Lyman Alpha Forest. And then as we get down to lower redshifts, there are things like the cluster abundance, weak gravitational lensing, which is the focus of this talk, and peculiar velocities, which, if time permits, I'll say a few words about. So here's an example plot from these authors, Liu, Scocimaro, and Starkman, where they looked at the growth factors, just as an example, in a DGP model. And they tuned the DGP model so that it had the exact same expansion rate as a lambda CDM model. But the growth functions are different. So those two models are degenerate to the first class of tests. But for the second class of tests, we can distinguish between them. And that's the only point I'm trying to make here. So both the growth function and the red lines underneath are the derivative of the growth function, which peculiar velocities are sensitive to. All right, so I've made that point. And these low redshift samples, of course, all this action here is happening at low redshifts. So we really want to get samples of the growth function at very low redshifts. That's one of the ultimate goals, amongst others, of this type of work. Okay, so just to give you again the primer on weak lensing, Tony Tyson talked about this quite a bit. These little sticks represent the distortion of galaxies. And if we measure those, we can infer the orange blobs in the middle, which are clumps of dark matter. So by measuring statistics of these kind of maps, we can infer the density and hence the dark matter power spectrum. And now the long-term goal, which I'll touch on briefly later on, and as Tony also mentioned, is to do this ultimately, to do this tomographically. So if you use slices of background redshifts and measure the mass, the intervening mass at different redshifts. We're not quite there yet in any real useful way that's useful for precision cosmology. But we're getting there quickly. Okay, so again, to remind you how you measure these polarizations from galaxies which themselves are not round, the idea is that we average over a number of shapes of galaxies. So the non-round shapes of galaxies is a source of shot noise, not the dominant one, not the dominant source of noise on large scales, which is cosmic variance. So panel on the left has no preferred orientation. Example on the right has a preferred orientation, which we can measure with some uncertainty. And the distortion of those galaxies is the quantity of shear that we're trying to measure, which we can convert ultimately into quantify in terms of the power spectrum. As other people have mentioned, you have B-modes. You shouldn't have B-modes in the lensing field. So if you see them, that's a sign that you haven't done your corrections for PSF distortions properly. Okay, so that's a systematic test, which I'll mention also briefly as well. The first order, we only expect the top type of modes and not the bottom ones. So we can measure the bottom ones. So if we see those are very strong, it's a sign, as I said, we haven't done our corrections properly. Just to give you a rough feeling of what the signal looks like, we can measure quantities like the RMS shear, which is related to the RMS conversion. So this is a measure of the mass density. And both of these quantities are of order. This is a rough useful formula. If the power spectrum looks like this, some normalization plus some power law. Remember, we're only measuring this on small scales. Then the RMS of the signal is going to scale with the amplitude, sigma 8. It's going to scale with omega. If we can measure it as a function of scale, we get some information about the local power spectrum, and it also scales with the, background, the redshift of the background galaxies. Okay, so this we measure this quantity or this quantity. We also have to know this if we're going to infer the cosmological parameters of interest. And this is currently a big source of uncertainty. All right, so let me go on to more specifics. The CFHT Legacy Survey is a survey which is two-thirds Canadian and two-thirds French. Whoops, that went by too fast. It's made possible by this wonderful camera called Megacam, which has a 1 square degree field of view on a 3.6 meter telescope. It still has quite a good étendue, the product of the telescope mirror area and the detector field of view. And so it's allowed us to do this quite ambitious survey. I'm going to talk mostly about the results of this recent paper by Fu et al., with a number of authors, most of whom are in Canada or in France. What's particularly interesting about this version is that we're now reaching with lensing out into the linear regime, okay, whereas previous surveys were in the nonlinear regime. So now we're starting to approach the linear, we're in the linear regime for the first time. Okay, so those are the areas that we're going to analyze and discuss in this paper. There's about 57 square degrees. There's some holes in there in three different patches on the sky. So because of the holes, the effective area is a little bit smaller, about roughly 2 million galaxies. And just to orient yourself, the size of each of these little squares is one field of view of that Megacam camera. It's something like 14 megaparsecs. Okay, or if you're used to looking at the night sky, it's about that big compared to the moon. So it's quite a large area. Okay, so what are the data that we measure? I'm not going to describe this in too much detail due to lack of time. This is one statistic you can measure, the correlation function of aligned polarization sticks, aligned shear. Okay, so the signal that we're measuring, which is related to the cosmological parameters, are the red points. The B modes, which we expect to be zero, are these open circles. Okay, and you can see that we're going up to a very large, this is in arc minutes, so we can measure this out to a couple of degrees. Okay, now the fact that the B modes are close to zero gives us confidence that our correction for the PSF distortion is good. But you notice that it's not perfect. There are regions, for example, here, where the B modes are inconsistent with zero. And to be honest, we don't fully understand this at this time. That's about the scale of one whole mosaic, one whole image. So it's presumably something to do with the corrections on those scales. However, if we exclude this particular, this is the blow up, this is where it corresponds to in this diagram. If we exclude this area, it doesn't affect our conclusions significantly. Okay, so the game is now to take this correlation function, warning, these error bars are correlated. Of course, the analysis allows for the correlated errors. It's to take this correlation function compared to the predictions of cosmological models. First, I'll just show you a few plots showing you what cosmological parameters you get out in the sigma 8 omega plane for different choices of angular scales probes, all right? So different slices in this direction. So on small scales, we get this this red banana. And on the larger scales, which are the linear scales, we get the green banana. Okay, so they appear to be consistent with each other. That's the important point to take home. And this measurement, this green one, is the first measurement on linear scales. If we put them all together, and compare it to WMAP, this is WMAP3. Put them all together, WMAP3 is here, our results are here. They intersect in this yellow blob, okay, and that gives us these cosmological parameters. Pretty much consistent, I think WMAP5 is basically the same thing, but it's sort of cut off a little bit at its lower end. So I'm not expecting this would change very significantly with WMAP5 in there. Okay, so that's the analysis as it stands right now. What are we going to do? This is only a fraction of our area. We have 57 square degrees shown there. The full data set will have roughly triple that. Okay, so these error bars will come down by a order of a factor of 2 in the vertical direction. Okay. We are now wrestling with tomography. So trying to use photometric redshifts to do the slicing technique that I talked about. That is proving to be a very interesting experience. It's to do this right because of the source redshift dependence, you really have to know very accurately what the true distribution of redshifts are in each photometric redshift bin. Okay, and a small fraction of outliers can have a big effect, so it's very important to quantify that carefully. So that's a current source of activity. And once we have tomography, we'll be able to say more about the initial goals, the evolution of this sigma 8, for example, as a function of redshift. Okay, and that in turn will tell us about dark energy, W, and so on. So that's the current major focus, is to get this tomography right. There are, of course, other things you can do that people in the audience are more expert than I am. Higher order correlation functions, in particular, can help break this degenerate banana that you saw in the previous diagrams. Okay. And lastly, an interest of mine is also to use this for good old gastrophysics, understanding, for example, the evolution of galaxies as a function of redshift, because through galaxy-galaxy lensing, we know what their masses are now, and so we can compare objects of the same dark matter halo mass at different redshifts. But that's a little bit off the topic of this meeting. Okay, so let me summarize the weak lensing stuff, and if I still have a little bit of time, I'll talk about peculiar velocities. Okay, so this is the first measurement of weak lensing in the linear regime. It's pretty much consistent with what you would get from WMAP and other probes, so there's no big surprises there in some sense. We get the same sigma 8 that we would have expected, which can be either a good thing or a disappointing thing, depending on your point of view. No evidence in some sense at present for any unusual growth functions, growth factors, but there are going to be lots more applications to come as we understand this data set better and better, and it gets larger and larger. Okay, let me squeeze in one more topic, just a one-pager. All right, so this is changing topics completely, and I think Jim Peebles is going to go like this because it's the 1980s all over again. All right, peculiar velocities. There have been some new surveys recently done by Giovanelli, Haynes, and collaborators, and we've combined those and compared them with other surveys that have been published. and we find that all of these surveys, there are about a dozen, with the exception of one, Lauer and Postman, are consistent with each other. Okay? And so you take all these surveys together and you combine them, and we have a new technique. This is work, I should point out, in collaboration with Hume Feldman and Rick Watkins. We have some new optimal weighting schemes that try to account for the sparse sampling of a survey and assign weights in such a way to mimic, for example, a window function of choice, like a 50 megaparsec Gaussian. Okay, so we've applied these weights to our data, and we find that when you combine all the surveys together, the mean motion of a 50 megaparsec Gaussian is about 400 kilometers per second, okay, which is quite high. What you would expect in the lambda CDM model with standard parameters like the ones I showed you before in the previous slides is maybe 100 kilometers per second in each Cartesian component. Okay, and we have a few of those which are 100, but one of them is 350 to 400. That's the galactic Y direction close to the old great attractor, the Shapley concentration. Okay, so this volume that we're talking about, 50 megaparsec, goes beyond the great attractor. Okay, so we measure this velocity 400. We expect it to be 100. And so for a given cosmological model, you can compute a chi-squared, allowing for the random errors, the sparse sampling errors, and the RMS that you expect in that model. Okay, and that, which I said is about 100, 100 kilometers per second. So this BC stands for best case, and those are the parameters which are on that WMAP error ellipsoid that maximize the bulk flow that are at the 95% level. Okay, so it's a highish omega and a reasonably high sigma 8. You get very high chi squares when you put all the data together. Okay, and the probability of that of getting such a high chi-squared is fairly low. Okay, so that's sort of the summary table from this. There's three. Each of these surveys that are listed here are themselves composites. This is one with fairly large errors. This deep composite is a set of cluster surveys, which has quite small errors, and it agrees very well with this SFI survey of Giovanelli, Haynes, and collaborators. So these two have the most statistical power. They have the smallest errors, hence they generate the largest chi-squares, although they're all consistent with each other in terms of amplitudes. So independently, these two samples both push the limits of these models, and of course, put together, the constraint is stronger still. So I'll just leave you, I think, with that puzzle that we still don't understand peculiar velocities even after 20 years since the Great Attractor. Thanks.
Any questions?
So for the weak lensing analysis, how robust is the assumption of no intrinsic alignment of galaxies?
Intrinsic alignments, yes. Okay, so there's a number of systematics that I didn't go into, and I don't have a slide to show that. Intrinsic alignments are what the question is referring to are, suppose you look out at the sky, you're looking for galaxies that are correlated, but if they're physically together and aligned with each other, that's a source of contaminating source of shear. Most people who've studied that guesstimate, it of course depends on the depth of the survey, because the deeper your survey, the fewer true pairs you have and the more, you know, physically separated pairs there are. For a survey like ours, people tend to estimate it's something like about 10% contamination is possible. We have done some tests which are roughly consistent with that. There are some techniques, though, that we haven't employed yet, where you can use the redshift dependence of the signal to try to null that, but that's work for the future. I think, as you said, the deeper it is, then the less of a problem it is. It's big in Sloan or something like that, right? But it's small as you go deeper.
Just a quick, on the peculiar velocities thing. Yep. So that's the peculiar velocities within the 50 megaparsec Gaussian. Yep. Around us?
Around us, correct.
Can you do a similar sort of thing with deeper surveys of like looking at the correlated motion of like 50 megaparsec volumes towards each other in other areas? Or is that
Would, in principle, yes. In practice, it would be quite noisy. You know, it gets harder as you go further out. So if you have two disparate regions, they're both quite noisy. So we haven't experimented with that.
So I was just wondering how many sigma this discrepancy is.
Well, it's about 3, I would guess. It's like 99. If you take these numbers seriously, 99.5, that's like 3 sigma, right?
Okay, let's thank Mike again.